This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 426, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 426. I am Josh Flanagan. Today with me here are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hola, mi amigo.
And the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem.
Hooray.
And I know it's a stupid joke, but I can't get it out of my head.
It's really funny.
It's really funny.
It was so unusual. Like, it wasn't even close.
Yeah. No.
X-Men
words. Did you guys Travoltify your names?
Yes, I did.
Paige Morphy.
I was Connor with two N's. Like, why did he add the second N?
And how did we even know that?
Yeah, exactly.
So. We are iFanboy, and we like comics and every... he put so much thought into what he said before the name.
And there's
and
a really
just
funny
completely
photo.
Blew it.
There's a funny photo of him studying the script right as he goes out, before he's going out. Like, he had the word in his head.
I've never heard of this woman or film. What am I doing? I'm so fake. Xenu? Is it Xenu? We talk about comics every week. We read a bunch of them. One of us has the job of picking the one that is best. That is the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that for, I want to say, the first 10 minutes or so is usually how it works out. Then we talk about some of the other books. Then we talk about some more books. Then we talk about some other stuff. I think you get the gist of it. Before we get started, we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't read them, come back later after you have, or forge boldly forward. Your call, bro. Connor, you had the pick of the week.
Yep. It was a good week. A lot of number ones came out this week, and also a lot of really fun books to read. But the pick of the week ended up being the first book that I read that made me genuinely feel many emotions. And I can't even imagine what it was like for a dog lover to read this book. But Afterlife with Archie, number four, from Roberto Guayar-Sacasa and Francisco Francavilla, is our pick of the week. It's the second time out of four issues it's been the pick of the week. And there's no irony in this pick whatsoever. I know a lot of people are talking about this book online. I feel like some of it's probably ironic. Just it's sort of funny to talk about loving Archie. But I think this is a genuinely good book.
It is.
And this was a genuinely moving issue on many levels.
Vegas.
It was rough. So if you haven't been following the story, a zombie outbreak has broken out in Riverdale, and starting off with Jughead's dog, who was killed. He tried to get it resurrected via Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and that spell caused his dog to become a zombie dog, and then, you know, it spread from there. So In this issue, Archie runs home. All the kids have been hiding out in Veronica Lodge's house, the compound, and Archie runs home to check on his parents, where he encounters his parents, his dog. We see a lot of flashbacks to himself as a kid, getting the dog in the pound. And, Paul, I mean, you're the dog lover here.
There's a shot of Vegas's eyes. He's basically just trying to save Archie from Jughead's dog, Hot Dog.
Right.
And he's speaking in sort of we three kind of speech. He calls him like Archie Master, you know, run, run, run. You know, I love you. Thank you for everything you've done for me and everything, but you've got to get out of here. And of course, by the end of it, you know, he's a zombie dog too. And it pretty much shattered my heart.
Well, it's a very brutal fight between the two dogs. I mean,
they're at each other's throats, and I'm like, if he bites the zombie dog, that doesn't make him a zombie. He won't get.
Well, it depends on the rules of the zombie universe.
Yeah,
what the rules are.
But then there's clearly a shot where a Hot Dog bites him, and right. You know, and basically Archie runs away and runs into zombie dad.
I felt like the dog scene was very emotional. I'm not even a dog lover, but it was very emotional. But
you're
then
allergic.
For me,
you have an excuse.
Yeah, but for me, the scene that really got me was. So Archie's dad has been turned to a zombie. And he's got to protect his mom from his dad. And there's a lot of sort of, and I'm not implying this is true for the Archie family, but there's a lot of parallels to sort of abuse, you know, the son protecting the mother from the abusive father parallels here, in which Archie basically beats his dad into the true death with a baseball bat and interspersed with memories of him as a kid with his dad. And it was awful. And in a good way, in a real emotional way. Like, I didn't enjoy reading that scene. It was very uncomfortable.
There's flashes, you know, him and his dad, you know, with like some balloons walking in the park and
or Little League and Little tying League. Tying his bow tie for the prom and teaching him to shave while interspersed with him beating him with a bat in a great 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 15 panel page showing all this stuff. And just this was an emotional gut punch. Also, I'm really kind of over the Cheryl Blossom incest storyline. Like, I feel like I don't want to see that anymore.
It's very not subtle at all.
Don't want to see that anymore. It makes me uncomfortable.
Like, there's subtext and then there's context. What's above context?
It's hitting you over the head.
Yeah.
And I just don't like it. I don't like it. It's not good. I mean, it's good, but it just makes me very uncomfortable. And I don't need this to happen anymore. Apparently she doesn't either. That's the point of this storyline. She doesn't want to be involved with her brother anymore. She wants to go join the other kids.
Her brother thinks it would be, you know, he kind of likes the idea of them being the only two people left in the world who aren't zombies. And he likes that they match. They both have red hair and everything. And it's just, he thinks it's poetry.
Ugh. And so she wants out and she wants to go where all the kids are hiding, her friends. And the end of the issue is all of the zombies we've met so far, Jughead, Vegas, Hot Dog, Pop from Pop Tate's, have amassed into a zombie horde, and they're heading towards the lodge compound, and it says, next is siege. This is a really emotionally charged book, I think, Paul. I don't, you know,
and what's kind of impressive about it is it's building on relationships that we're familiar with. We know Hot Dog in Vegas.
Types,
we know, we know those. Yeah, Archie types.
Archie types.
Yeah, so we know those relationships, but they've never been as looked at as deeply as they are here. There's this extra layer of depth to it, and so because the stories have always been so sort of like disposable and kind of superficial. Let's go to the malt shop or whatever, and so here. They do a really good job of establishing, like, you really care about this boy and his dog.
Right.
You know, even if you're like, oh, yeah, Archie does have a dog. Right. I forgot about that. Like, here, it's all there on the page by doing those flashbacks and seeing him getting the dog for the first time. And they have that conversation that his parents have the conversation about when, you know, when his mom was a girl, she had a dog and the dog got hit by a car and it was the worst feeling ever. And she starts crying, thinking about the dog. But then also, Archie one day is going to have to deal with, you know, losing this friend, and it's something that every pet owner has to deal with, unless you own like a parrot because they live for like 90 years. But unless they fly into soup like that,
that parrot will bury you.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of it has to do with the Francisco Francavilla art.
It does
because you don't have that veneer of the Archie style to hide behind,
right?
and everything here, you know, is drawn to look like real people. And that's we talked about it before. Like, for me, the Archie, Veronica, Betty love triangle becomes slightly more ridiculous when it's viewed through that more realistic lens. Mm-hmm. The archetypes sort of make sense to me just when, you know, with the cross-hatched hair and everything. But when you've got these people drawn as normal people, then it all becomes more real.
Yeah, you start thinking about them in terms of what would a real person do if they were like, if you were Betty, you know, why would you
have deal some with, self-respect?
Have
woman.
Some self-respect. And exactly. Yeah,
but this is a fantastic book. And this is a book where when it comes out, I'm really excited for it. Mm-hmm. And I know we were excited for it when they announced it. And I would say part of that was just the idea of what the hell is it going to be. But now that it's out and it's a real thing, this is a genuinely really good book.
And it looks like they're going to be doing more. Like, it's not just going to be zombies. There's going to be other horror elements to it in the coming months.
Well, you already have the witches who cause this.
Right, that's true. But, I mean, they're like even more monster threats.
Right.
Like, I think they're going in sort of a, I don't know, a Lovecraft direction.
Which is good, because otherwise I think you run out of story quickly.
Yeah, which, you know, like when Jughead's a zombie, you know, in the first issue, like you just took out.
Well, the first two issues, we lost at least three or four recognizable names, and you know, so you're entering Walking Dead territory. You couldn't do that with Archie. It's just, if you add new characters to the story, they're not going to resonate because they're not the characters we know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm excited about Tsukasa being, you know, this first ever creative director for Archie Comics. That news came out this week, and that's pretty exciting because they've been doing some really good stuff, like with his involvement as writer. He did the Archie meets Glee thing, which sounds like a throwaway thing, but we enjoyed that.
Really fun.
I'm excited to see what they do next.
Afterlife with Archie number 4. You can still jump on that train. I imagine there'll be a collection very soon after the 6th issue. Archie's usually really good about that, getting them out quickly. So if this sounds like your cup of tea, and really, if you're a Walking Dead fan or a horror fan, or even a fan of good stories, this is a book you should check out, no matter what you feel about the Archie brand or the characters.
I wonder if they're going to put them out in a little digest.
To sell them at the supermarket?
Yeah.
I hope they keep the sort of rough paper.
It's really nice. It's, yeah.
So now, it was a close call between that and Starlight number 1, the newest Image book. It seems like every week there's a new Image book, and every week it's the one I really enjoy. This was from Mark Miller and Goran Parloff. You may recall us talking Goran Parloff up last year for Fury Max, the best book of 2013 or 12, whatever year that came
2013
out.
2013 was last year, yes.
Did you guys read this book?
I did. Yes. I really, I'm very intrigued by the story of like the multiple Millers.
Right.
There was a version of Mark Miller very early on, around the time that he was, you know, like this is over 10 years ago, was when he was doing Authority. And he was the guy who I really liked. I liked his work. I liked the stuff that he was doing. And then he got into a very – I don't think pop is the right word, but he got into a sensibility that I didn't really like on a lot of work. And a lot of the creator-owned stuff that he was coming out with, many of it in the back of this, just didn't work for me. And then the last couple things that he's done seem to be much more thoughtful, or at least – appear that way and less bombastic. When we're talking about Jupiter's Legacy and Starlight, it's interesting because he's still working in sort of a superhero genre after all that. And I've really enjoyed those books. And I like this book a lot.
Starlight, so what's great about it was not knowing anything about it.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying that aspect of not running the website anymore, is not knowing what's coming and didn't know anything beyond the cover and the creative team. I wouldn't have probably given this a look, honestly, if it had been with Goran Parloff, if I'm being completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. But it's basically his take on John Carter, in that hotshot pilot gets sucked into this alien dimension, ends up saving the universe, finding love with a scantily clad princess.
It's also very Farscape as well.
He didn't find love with her. He turned her down.
No, it's true, but she was all into him and everything.
Look at her.
She's a very Deja Thoris kind of character.
Yes, exactly. Ends up back on Earth and has a life with his wife, and now we see him in the present. He's old. His wife has died. And I didn't expect that part of it at all. I mean, I thought that was great. I thought the portrayal of an old man, recently widowed, with this life that people think is his crazy made-up story.
I like that it's out. I think that makes it super interesting that people know about it.
Uh-huh.
I really liked the contrast of the fact that he was this in this magical world and this like hero, and his kids are just regular dipshits.
Yeah, they won't come visit him on the anniversary of his wife's dying, and
Yeah.
He made the reveal of the table he'd set.
Yeah.
It crushed me.
Yeah. Is this a lump thing? I was like, oh, that's the worst.
Yeah, but it's just the shot, you know, he's talking to his sons and the other one can come and then we pull back to see he's done this fancy table and he's not the kind of guy who does that kind of thing. And you just know he spent a lot of time folding those napkins.
Oh, yeah, when he's in the supermarket and he says, I printed out this recipe and I wanted to do something fancy like lasagna or chili.
Yeah, but all of it, even the lump and the dinner. I mean, this was a very nuanced
strong
story.
Character work.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, this like, and with no cheap thrills, I guess.
No.
Which is the thing that, you know, if you read Wanted, you know, there's a lot of that. And you could say there's a reason for it. And I totally understand those. And I can even respect it in a certain way. But I thought this was just much, much more subtle than I ever come to expect from Mark Miller. And in that way, Goran Parlov was perfectly matched with it. It was a big surprise. It was very good.
Unless you think this is all a story of a sad old man, the issue of an alien ship arrives on his doorstep. So clearly we're going back to adventure. But
I could stay in this. I just want to see how his life sucks.
I could too, but that's. I also really enjoy the stories of what happens next, what happens after the adventure. Sure. You know, how do you go back to your boring old everyday life after you saved the universe? You know, what does Samwise Gamgee do with the rest of his life? Does he just sit and drink in the pub? Because
girl,
you know, but like it's like there's. You're always going to have that sense of you did something important once and now you're just clocking in.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like at all.
So I always find those stories interesting. I just loved this, every aspect of it.
I love the various cutaways to the fantasy worlds, and they're these kind of big widescreen sort of landscapes.
Well, that's what I mean. There's a shot of him like in the supermarket getting shampoo, cut to him on a jumping out of a canoe with a, you know, that's going over a waterfall, cut to him driving a car, cut to him driving a dragon. I mean, you know, what is that like? Are you ever satisfied really with your life again after you've driven a dragon? Dragons are economical, by the way. There's not a lot, you know, no gas involved.
Mm. We have to feed the dragon.
True, but then you don't have to worry about traffic. So I'm kind of getting to the point now where I want some of these Image books to suck.
I hear what you're saying.
Because there's a lot of them, and I don't have time to read all these things. So, yeah, I mean, there's a Southern Bastards preview in the back of one of these issues, and I was just like, oh, come on.
I didn't read it. I was like, I'm going to read it anyway.
I didn't read it either, but I'm going to read it. It reminded me that it was, no, I mean, the preview. I didn't read the preview.
Right.
But it just reminded me there's going to be another book I'm really looking forward to, and there's just a lot of them. Yeah.
I actually made some cuts this week. There were things that I was like, I have to stop. I can't.
What did we think of the other number one this week? Moon Knight number one.
Moon Knigget 1?
Moon Knigget 1 from Marvel, Warren Ellis, and Declan Shalvey. Jordi Belair.
I think... The story for me is going to be the art.
Yeah.
The choices made by Shalvey and Belair to put her in the book right away. No, I mean, she's the character. She's featured in the book very shortly, not as herself. That's irrelevant. It was a really interesting design and color choice where basically
it looks like
just
snow from.
Yeah, there's just no color on Moon Knight.
I noticed as I saw the cover early on and I said, are you going to do this in the interiors too? Because that's really interesting. Because like, I could see it being like a stylistic choice for the cover to do something bold like that.
Yeah.
But to do it in the interiors is really interesting. And if you don't notice it or if you can't quite see what they're doing, when he takes his mask off, the face is colored.
It's gray. Right?
But it's just when he has that mask on, it's all fully white or black. There's no
value. Well, I think you definitely noticed that it pops. He pops off the page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which it's not like he's, you know, like Josh. So he's not colored white. He's just not colored at all.
But it's just it's very interesting. It does this optical illusion where he sort of glows and he really sort of stands out in a scene. And you have this fun scene where he's sort of, I don't know, he's like the Adrian Monk of this, you know, police, you know, like he comes in and he's the better detective, but he's not part of the unit or anything like that.
For me, Warren Ellis is, I don't want to say he's hit or miss because he's better than that, but I don't always like everything he does.
Yeah.
And I like the approach to this and that it was low key, but like the fact is like, I don't like Moon Knight very much. I've realized that I've read a bunch of reboots and things like that. I don't like the multiple personality thing, whatever that last version was. Who did
the one
that?
Where he was Bendis. Yeah.
And then
Bendis
was it Opeña?
Maliv.
Oh, Maliv. Yeah, like,
and they reference that here too, that he, his personal realities, his alters were like Wolverine and Spider-Man and Captain America.
Yeah, and I caught that, but I just sort of gave up on it because it doesn't, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't like it. I remember
he's moving
it
on as well. He's playing up to the mystical aspect of the character, which is the other thing. Like, you either do that or you do the identities thing.
So it gives them sort of this way that, sort of like with the Joker, actually, the approach has been taken to him, is that every time they start something new, they just start something new. So it was interesting to see how that was done. I don't know how much it sucked me in that way.
I'm going to give it one more issue to see if it grabbed. It didn't really grab me story-wise at all.
No, and that's kind of what I'm getting at.
But visually, there's like some great sequences, like when he goes out of the car and into the manhole and then down into the sewers. Yeah,
sure.
Just some wonderful storytelling there. And that pulled me in. But I agree with you. I need to see what's going on in issue two to figure out this. Like, the character himself didn't necessarily grab me, but
I don't know what he is.
I like the Shield monster thing, the guy who I like the idea that Shield
doesn't always
take care of its own, and
that's what Warren Ellis does, though. He comes up with those kind of ideas. He goes, well, what if you just go around this corner just a little bit, what happens with Shield? And he's super smart about that stuff, obviously, and so that's really interesting. I thought, just from the concept of first issue of a superhero book, the fight in this is the most low-key thing on Earth. He throws the little moonerang.
Yeah, moonerang.
At one point, but it's off screen when that happens. He trips the guy, and then he blocks a bullet with his moonerang. That's the entire. That's all the action in this book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything else is super calm, you know, and you know, super subdued. That's a tough sell. Everything,
it's not so much now. It feels like it's more of an a cult or horror crime book than it is a superhero book.
Yeah.
At least, I mean, he's wearing a suit. He's not wearing, a mask, but he's not wearing, you know, a cape and tights.
I'm saying, I like a lot of the aspects of it. I like the way it looks. I like the way it feels. I like the way it reads, but I can't tell you it's grabbed me.
And the problem is, in an era where there's so many good books, you really have to grab me quickly because I got a lot of reading.
I do really enjoy seeing this sort of this next step, this next evolution of an artist who I think we've been following for quite a while now and like a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's one of the – it's not the best thing he's ever done. It's up there, definitely.
It's really been one of those cool things, you know, about doing this job that we've been doing, is that there are a bunch of guys who we've sort of known, and to keep watching them – I think we talked about this a little with Remender, like, and to just keep watching them outdoing themselves over and over again. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. Just see that over and over again. It's super heartening.
So this week we had a number one book from Dark Horse Comics written by Greg Rucka called Veil.
Yeah, yeah.
And the artist whose name I'm not even going to attempt.
Adele Dazeem.
Tony Fazula. Fazul.
Please keep
it's a beautiful book.
Don't get mad at I'm stupid.
Yeah, it looks like
Fazula.
I'm not making fun of his name. I'm making fun of my ability to pronounce it. So that's
looks like Fazula.
Pasta Fazul. All right.
This is sort of night and day from Lazarus. Yeah. It's a totally different feeling and vibe to it. And what's exciting about it? So there's this essay in the back from Rucka saying that this is a character that's sort of been in his, or a concept at least, that's been in his mind for years and years. He finally decided to jump with it, and it seems like it's a work in progress where he's not entirely sure where it's going, whereas Lazarus feels very much like every panel is, you know.
That essay actually made me feel really bad because I did not like this at all.
You didn't like it?
No. And then knowing he's had this character in his head for 20 years, I felt really bad, but I didn't connect to this in any way.
The essay was my favorite part of reading it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says. I think in the same way, I think it was interesting, but I don't know that it was formed enough. I mean, it's a thing that we get with a lot of first issues of comics, is that sometimes they're cold opens and they don't give us enough to grab onto. So sometimes you need two or three. And I think that we could all safely say, you know, it's Greg Rucka. So you have a little part of you thinks, well, I should give him the benefit of the doubt on this. I don't think I felt as strongly as Connor that I wouldn't say I didn't like it, but I'm not going to tell you. I felt like a little bit of that familiar ground.
I need to know what's going on. I want to see issue two and where this character is going. So it's this girl who wakes up in the sewers among these rats, and she speaks in sort of rhymes, and it's like not. It's sort of like what's her face on Firefly.
River.
It's a little bit like that, where she's kind of crazy, but then suddenly she hits upon a rhyme, and it's very much an astute observation about the moment. And she goes up into the surface world naked, and you know, this is an urban environment, and people are sort of descending upon her, and you know, want to take her into the strip club and stuff. And one guy decides, you know, I need to put my coat on her and take her back to my place and figure out what's going on, and then maybe I can get her some medical help. And he seems to have honest, good intentions. Then some bad guys show up at the door, and she causes them basically to shoot themselves. She maybe has some kind of mind control powers. We don't know exactly how it works yet, because she's not entirely lucid. Right. And then it turns into sort of a chase, because we've got these dead bodies on the ground outside the guy's apartment. Now we got to move. I don't know exactly what's going on here. I want to give it at least another chapter to figure out if it's something that I want to get. I like the art a lot, though. It's got this kind of watercolor effect to it. Really interesting colors.
Yeah. I think Rucka, well, I don't think he certainly has earned at least one more issue out of me, but I didn't connect to this in any way. But maybe issue two I will.
Okay.
Another number one, Magneto.
Magneto number one. This is Cullen Bunn, and Wada is the artist. And I like this quite a bit. If you liked the most recent, you know, X-Men movie with Nazi Hunter Magneto, and we saw a little bit of that in, was it Uncanny X-Force, the Remender stuff? There was that one sort of one-off issue where Magneto...
Sure, I don't remember.
Magneto, he tasks Wolverine with killing a Nazi, I believe.
Yes. It's been a while, but I do remember that.
So he's this hunter, basically. And what I liked about it is it doesn't necessarily feel like a superhero book, but it does. But it has the advantage of him ripping.
Is it a flashback, or is it?
It's now. He's this is the bald Magneto, and he's got cool white eyebrows, and he's not usually wearing the mask. Although it's kind of cool. He breaks into a place, and he draws all the metal toward him, and it creates sort of the iconic helmet, sort of the way it looks on the cover with the, you know, with the barbed wire and everything. And I thought this was a beautiful book. It feels like a character study about, and I like the concept of doing an ongoing Magneto series where he's your protagonist. He's not exactly an anti-hero. He's sort of an anti-villain in a way, because he's merciless, but he has good intentions. It's instead of doing Nazi hunting, he's hunting down people who commit crimes against mutants. And he's got sort of a Rust Cole sort of board with, you know, all kinds of maps and stuff. And he uses his magnetic powers to control the thumbtacks and everything. And I thought it was a great script. I thought the art was gorgeous. This is Jordy Belair on colors again. And again, it looks totally
different.
Do we have
to say that anymore? Can we just
know
assume?
What he's not on colors. Yeah.
But the one thing I would say, though, is that, you know, the colors are great, but in a completely different way. They're really, you know, they're really subdued here. And it's a completely different effect than Moon Knight, where it's more bold and things pop. There's a lot of blues. It's very moody. I'm digging this. I like it a lot.
Well, all right. Batman Superman Annual number one came out. And this is one of those degrading art issues where you...
I like this quite a bit because it felt very much like an old classic superhero team-up book that they used to do in like an annual where, you know, you take a bunch of characters who don't normally hang out and put them together for a one-shot adventure. And I like that bit a lot. Greg Pak wrote it, and he's doing a really good job on the main series. But you're right. I mean, the first part was drawn by Jay Lee, and it was awesome. The second part was drawn by Kenneth Rocafort, and I still like it. I like his art a lot. I liked it. It's not as awesome as the Jay Lee stuff. And then the third part was Philip Tan, which was, you know, long-time listeners will know how that went. But I still liked it overall. I mean, the art
I did. No, I liked it. And I actually totally understand it because there's a lot of issues, and you know, we've all come to accept the fact that Jay Lee's only going to do so many pages.
In fact, I was surprised he did the annual.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's got the main book to draw.
And, well, some of it. but I liked that it was... I like the gathering of the characters. I think mm-hmm. it was like... I like the transference of two from each of your clan will come. And they were like, okay. And they worked that out. And they brought along Supergirl, and they brought along Jason Todd, which I think is fantastic. it was a really fun sort of grouping of stuff. And then Batgirl shows up, and you know, her and they go and they hack and with Steel.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And like, Batman teaches him how to be better.
Mongol's son. His name I can't remember.
Yeah, Mongol's son. Which is his ultimate downfall. Just like there's a real edge to, and I've noticed this in Action Comics too, which we're not talking about, but like, there's a real edge to Greg Pak's stuff mm-hmm. where it's like, you really don't understand what's going on and you need to stop screwing with things even though you have a ton of power. I feel like that's the thing he keeps doing with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's about questioning the idea of, if you have all of the power in the world and you're the most powerful thing ever, how far does that get you? And if you're not thinking, not very. I think it's a really smart approach. I don't want to keep reading it forever. I don't want that to be the only theme of everything, but it's an interesting theme. And I thought this was a nice – it was a good annual. It was what you think of an annual. It's a bigger than normal story, and it's fun, and it's got all that superhero stuff.
There's an octopus in there.
That too. Yep. Just cutting him up.
Yeah, this is basically just Mongol's son shows up with Murder World, demands justice for his dead father, insists that Batman and Superman gather their clan to fight his clan, and that's what happens. They fight.
And then Batman pulls the great trick. Like, he's like, actually, I beat your father, so you're my clan. And they're like, ah, he's got us!
Parliamentary rules must be followed.
I love, but that's brilliant. That's great writing. Yeah. That's really fun stuff.
And then so they team up, and I thought it was fun. I thought it was really fun. I liked Batgirl and Steel a lot together.
Yep.
There was a lot of talk about Crypto being in this issue in advance of it coming out, and
then he wasn't.
He was in it a bit. He's a dire wolf now. I miss him being a Labrador a little bit, but I'm okay. He's at least nice.
He wasn't. He didn't used to be a Labrador. That was a recent thing. He was a, I don't know, dog, but he was a little skinny dog before.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know, like the classic. But I don't know. Crypto for me, I think Manipul got it with the Superboy run.
I believe he's a dire Berdoodle.
It's hypoallergenic.
And those aren't cheap. I mean,
no, they're not.
Got the breeding fees in those.
Yeah,
there you awful.
Say that you wanted to buy a book on dire Berdoodles. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon to make your Amazon purchases. And when you do so through that link, we get a little piece of your purchases, which helps us do the things that we do. And we very much appreciate it. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. It costs you nothing. You're going to probably order some of that stuff anyway. You need your lubes. Not those kind. I'm saying household lubes.
Yes.
Right. For like it, squeaky
wheel gets them.
like a large thing of WD-40, which is actually a solvent, not a lubricant. So just so you know, that's not gonna help.
I was gonna let it go, but
okay. Just I'm glad that you know too.
Buy Game of Thrones season 3 on the Blu-ray.
Is that out in all of
yes, it? Yes, it is. It is. Came out a couple weeks ago.
I need to get that. I'm normally on top of those. That's where we are. You can also contribute more directly at ifanboy.com/registration, where you can become what we used to call it, a member. I don't know if we really say that. I don't know if that's the accepted nomenclature. But either way, it's a way for you to directly contribute the very small cost of either $3 a month or $30 a year, or honestly, whatever you write in the box, man.
$3 a month. That's like $14 a year. That's not.
That will be like half a comic book eventually.
Yes.
If you want to do that, and there are many people who do that, and we really appreciate that. That's very, very generous and directly contributing to the show. And at the beginning, when we say I fanboy listeners like you, we really mean we're talking to you, and we thank you for that. But that helps keep things going, and we don't even have to beg all that much because people are pretty good about that. So keep that up.
So next up, another one from Connor's favorite writer,
Jupiter's Legacy number 4, Mark Miller, Frank Quitely. And I have to question the. Well, not the wisdom, but it opens with a flashback, which really threw me off because it's been so long since this book came out.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember where we were, and I was like, oh, yeah, the mother got killed by the uncle or the nephew. Somebody killed the mother. We open up with a flashback to the very beginning of the story when the family gets their powers in the 30s, and I was very confused. And then,
yeah. When did issue one come out of this?
Because 2010.
No, it didn't.
No.
No, I don't know.
Because the new series of Punisher is on issue 3, and that just started
Marvel,
last month.
Marvel, you cannot compare.
It's a weekly.
You can't compare Marvel to anything.
Yeah.
Marvel will ship. You turn your back on Marvel, they'll ship a book. You can't trust them.
This is Frank Quitely, so you're going to get 4 issues a year, probably.
Yeah, but I was going to say, like, if it's been less than a year, we've gotten 4 issues of Frank Quitely, I'm not complaining.
Right. Yeah, take your
the
time.
The thing is, then after the flashback, it flashes forward from where we last left the story. So that was, it just, what I'm saying is it took a while for me to wrap my head around where we were in the story and what was going on and who the characters were. But once I did, I was very happy and enjoyed the book. I think actually I think this is a pretty strong Frank Quitely issue.
It is
compared to the last one, which I think got a little sketchy towards the end, but I love the guy who shows up at the end, the hunter who's going to find the missing family with his little pencil mustache and cane. I just think this is a great vibe to this book.
I like that, like, we don't know anything about that character, and that's like a classic comic book move, is to put that character on the back page, and normally everyone's like, oh no, Baron von Strucker.
Yeah,
right.
But instead we're just like, this dude, and you can get away with it.
Well, he's wearing all black. He's got the pencil mustache. You know, he means business.
He also looks like a bad guy in the 40s.
He's also got a squad with him of scary looking dudes too.
It's Dr. Mindbubble.
Yeah,
but I liked it. I thought the family was fun. I thought at first I was like, wow, he's writing some horrible kid dialogue, and then it was revealed the kid's a genius, so that made sense. So I liked it.
Also, he and his team are called the Professionals in bold, and if your name's in bold, it means you're important.
Maybe you should know who that is.
Yeah, so what I also liked is that, so basically the idea previously was, you know, the main Superman-esque character was murdered by his family because his brother was jealous and his son, that's his son, right?
Yeah.
Was also jealous of his authority over them, and so they killed him and took over the U.S. government, and, you know, the brother's a genius, so he had all these plans to fix everything. And so now we flash forward and realize and found that not only has he not fixed anything, it's actually way worse now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it's always
like that
dark, apparently.
It's always dark.
It's always dark in the U.S. That's the thing, that you'll hear a lot of debates about policy and whatnot, but no one ever says, Obamacare goes through, it's going to be dark all the time.
All the time.
I mean, that's right up there with death squads, I think. Although the Professionals may be part of a death squad. Maybe that's the thing that happened. I don't know. I don't want to get political.
Adventures of Superman 45, Paul, was the conclusion of the Ron Mars and Doc Shaner 3-part storyline, which is basically Superman and Iron Giant.
And Iron Giant, yeah, teaming up, though. That's sort of the cool thing, is people talk about, you know, the Iron Giant being the best Superman story. And this is a chance for that Superman to meet our Superman.
I love my robot brother.
Someone get Doc Shaner on a Superman book pronto.
Yes. Seriously.
But it's got to be the old Superman. DC
yeah.
Superman.
He drew the new Superman suit on his blog this week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, and it's okay for the new Superman suit. Like, it's still a good Superman, but I really prefer him drawing the classic Superman.
Don't you ever do that again. I see one hit of a collar on him, Doc, and I'm coming for you.
But also the whole supporting cast, you know, the classic Lois, classic Jimmy. I thought this was just a great story. The, you know, every once in a while they really hit on these with these digitals. I mean, they've been good for the most part all the way through. I went through and read all the Batman ones.
Yeah,
that I still haven't had a chance to do the Superman ones. But every once in a while, you're hitting a really good one. This was one of those really good.
Yeah, and I just want to say, Ron Mars also has a very good take on Superman's voice as well.
Those two could totally take over Superman book, and I'd be fine.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Are either of you reading The Saviors?
Yes, we talked about issue one or two.
Maybe I don't know.
We did.
I caught up. I was behind a little bit. This is James Robinson writing and J Bone drawing. J Bone is a collaborator of and. Very reminiscent of Darwin Cook,
yes.
And it shows in this. I think I like this, but it feels very, and this is not a criticism, it feels very improvisational.
Interesting.
It's like this guy discovers there's loose in that way. He's got this alien conspiracy, and a bunch of people are actually lizardy aliens, and he meets up with a sort of an anti-conspiracy group, and then in this issue, they basically get wiped out.
The
guy's like a stoner, and so he's like, I don't want to be here. I just want to go
I'm
back.
Not the hero type at all.
Yeah, can I? Do you mind if I smoke?
I am still reading it. I like it. Yes.
I'm interested to see where it goes. I mean, yes. I don't know. I don't know how long it goes. It could be a gigantic story, but it moves really well, and it's fun to look at. It's sort of monochromatic. It's not yes. black. It's black and white and orange, basically, or rust.
I like it. I like the art a lot.
Wait, I like yeah, and there's what? A ton.
It's black and white and orange.
Yep. Yes, it's like a black and white book that's been highlighted with orange.
Yeah. All right.
You like the like a Darwin rust. Cook Parker books kind of.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. And there's always a highlight color.
That's a style now.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked meeting this team. The team was interesting, and then they all died, or apparently they all died. But it's fun. I like it. Uncanny X-Men 18 featured fill-in art by Marco Rudy, who you recall did fill-ins on Swamp Thing back when Yannick Paquette was drawing it. And he did really crazy layouts and page designs back then where he used the foliage as the panel breaks. And in this issue, he uses Cyclops' out-of-control powers as the panel.
It was a cool idea.
Yes. I don't know if it worked out.
I mean, not every page. There were certain pages that worked better than others. But as a concept.
Yes.
No, I thought that that was really interesting.
There's a couple of really great pages here. I don't know if I loved it, though, in terms of art.
So a lot of Cyclops in this. I'm not big on that. I'm down with sort of young Cyclops because he's not a douchebag yet.
I did. I mean, I like it more now that I'm looking through it. I remember reading it going, oh, I don't like this the way it looks. But I'm liking it more as I'm flipping through it now. Maybe I'm just seeing more of the way he's designed the pages instead of reading the dialogue.
Yeah.
Sort of looking at the layouts. But
you know what's weird? Reading this in guided view.
I don't even know how that would work.
It's like being in a car accident. It's like you're reading a comic book and you're going through an intersection and you're hit by a train. That's sort of what it's like. So just read it, you know, full page.
There's one page looks very much like Sienkiewicz's Elektra book with the flashbacks, the kitty flashbacks. Where
Yeah.
I mean, the art's really good. I just didn't know if it fit this particular story. I don't know. I like.
Well, you're all in Cyclops's head. So
the dark place to be.
So doing it all in, I guess I'm thinking more of the layouts, but.
Yeah, and I think also sometimes I didn't know which blonde character was talking.
There are a lot of blondes. It helped when one of the cuckoos dyed her hair, but
right. You have the cuckoos, and you have Emma Frost, and you have Magic, and at some points I didn't know who was who.
Yeah. I like the scene where Cyclops, older Cyclops, is talking to young Jean Grey, and she's like, I don't think the thoughts you're having right now are very appropriate. and then, you know, shows him the wedding invitation, which she just carries around with her, I guess. We saw that she discovered it many, many issues ago. I don't even – it could have been an all-new X-Men. I don't know if it was in this, but
– she has a utility belt for a reason,
Paul. Utility belt and folded it up, and she's like, I know that, you know, you remember it well, but I can't even imagine it. You know, that's just weird, and it's a lot to deal with and very confusing. And then
you're so old, like 30.
Yeah. You get the moment where he's talking to young Scott. And he says, you know, avoid redheads and blondes. And he's like, how about brunettes? All women, really. Just Cyclops has a very warped.
It was good. I just, yeah, I don't know. It was fine. Now, Velvet 4.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a weirdo pervert here.
Right.
I believe that this is, and I believe this is the sexiest book on the stands.
Ooh.
Velvet.
Meaning that. This it's just so good.
Yeah.
It's really very good. And you've got this, I don't know, like I feel like we've seen a lot of female spies lately, but I really like there's some little twist on this woman that I really like because she's super capable and she doesn't really doubt herself, but she's not quite sure what she's doing and she's making it up. It's one of the closest.
Which is also because she's over the hill a bit.
Yeah.
So she's not like the Black Widow dropping in on a scene and taking right. everybody out with ease. It's hard for her. She's got to work right. at it. She's clearly have the skills, but they're the skills of someone 10 years past her prime.
Yep. It has one of those. I love the scenes in the casino with super rich people everywhere. That I don't know that these ever actually happened. They're wearing masks for some reason.
Of course
reason.
It does.
There's Josh, not enough weird sex stuff for it to be.
Weird masks.
It's in the background, though. It's there. Like,
it's there,
You can smell the room.
That guy with a pencil mustache, yeah.
Oh, did we sleep together? Like, it's just a great, fun book that it's a little like the Starlight book we were talking about earlier. Is it's 5 years later or 10 years later,
right?
You know, of when this stuff would have happened.
All these people over the hill, all these guys she's interacting with, none of them are like, you know, the James Bonds of the world. They're all like James Bond after he retired 10 years ago.
But they're still doing it to some extent
because they don't know what else to do. What else are you gonna do if you're a spy?
Oh, because
but go to the fucking mask sex parties.
That's what I would.
I would still be going, of course. Man, when she ripped that guy's cheek off,
that's not nice.
I was like, why?
It's a really good book.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I like every issue more than the last one, and it's not even like a. I got done with it, and I was like, "That was great." I'm thinking about it now. I'm like, "Yeah, I enjoyed that." I when these issues come in, I'm happy.
And Epting is really doing career work here.
Great on so the action sequences, just the kicking people.
Yep.
Also, maybe punching.
Punching.
Yeah. It's really
all dialogue in an italic font should be read as a foreign language.
Okay.
Even though the captions are sort of in an italic font.
Velvet from Image Comics, Ed Brubaker, see that thing. It's really, 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 really good.
She thinks it's Greek.
Those are some of the books of the week we want to talk about. Let's take an audience question from Josh in Chicago, Illinois. He wrote this in between eating brats, right? That's what they do in Chicago?
I think that's more of a Wisconsin thing. But I'm sure they
I've heard brats at C2E2.
That's because they're delicious. It's all that whole area is brat conscious.
That's true. God, cardiologists must be so rich.
I want a brat right now.
Josh says, Marvel and DC seem to have had different successes in other media over the years, with DC having greater success in animated TV shows aimed at a younger audience, and Marvel having more success with their movies, which are mostly designed for older audiences, at least teen plus. I grew up watching Batman the Animated Series and reading a lot of DC comics. I was born in 1984, for reference. Then as I got older, reading more Marvel comics. Over the last 8-10 years, seeing the Marvel movies have been pretty excellent, while DC movie ventures have been, I'll say, of mixed quality. Do you think there's a value to DC focusing on a younger audience? Do you think their characters and universe lend themselves to a younger audience? I've always held the opinion the DC universe tends to have, or at least work better, with a more rigid black and white morality, while Marvel lends itself better to a more nuanced interpretation of morality.
Just for reference, I was also born in 1984, so I have the same experiences with the animation and everything.
Happy 30th to both of you, and go fuck yourselves.
I'm still 29. You got a few months left.
Don't rush him, Josh. Don't rush him.
Don't rush me.
Not cool.
No,
I'd just like to congratulate Josh on his use of the word media in the correct plural form.
Exactly.
I think just looking at just the empirical evidence, just looking at the stuff that's out there, I think he's right.
It's a very good read on the situation.
Should DC focus on younger audience? I mean, that's the real question. Do you think there's value to DC focusing on a younger audience?
I think that for whatever reason, those characters, and I experienced this, like the first ones that you are, I feel like a lot of kids, I can only really speak for Americans, get hooked on is Superman and Batman, whether it's those.
I think Spider-Man too, honestly. You
know. Sort of, but not. It was never as much for me. Spider-Man was always a little bit later, and like sort of.
Yeah, but that. I mean, I think I don't know
that gray Marvelness, that angsty teenager thing, isn't traditionally what happened with DC. With DC, there was a master or a father figure, and then an apprentice or a son, mm-hmm. and he looked up to that, and it wasn't. Weird. They weren't angsty until Jason Todd came along,
right?
You know,
sure.
You know, Wally followed Barry around. He was like, "What are we gonna do?" You know, like it was, or Jimmy Olsen in Superman, and it wasn't like that. Whereas Marvel, like there wasn't a father figure so much. You know, Peter Parker had to make his way on his own. So you watched him try to figure it out and screw it up. Maybe that's the difference.
See, for me, when I was a kid, Spider-Man was just as big a part of our lives as Batman because we had Spider-Man as Amazing Friends, and we had the Spider-Man 1967 cartoon, which played in the mornings in New York anyway, that we watched as we were getting ready for school. So then Spider-Man was always...
He was in New York. He was flying
but around. But also, I mean, Spider-Man as Amazing Friends was like the cartoon for kids our age growing up.
But I'm even talking about before that. Like, I just remember I remember tying a towel around my neck and being like, sure. I'm Superman. And I feel like that was first. Now, granted... You know, I was born in 77, in the Superman movie.
Right.
You know, that all sort of dovetails.
The biggest thing in the world.
Exactly.
I do think there are a couple of more points here. One is that actually right now the DC animation's focused at teens and above. They're rated PG-13. And the Marvel animation has gone down from being all ages to being focused on kids 4 to 8.
It's a good point. There's a lot of kids Marvel cartoons.
So they have actually gone the opposite direction. I mean, DC cartoons have been for teens and up since the Tim era. So you're talking about since the 90s, whereas Marvel's has focused on the younger audiences. But I think for the movies, it comes down to quality. If Green Lantern had been a really good movie and Man of Steel had been a really good movie, we'd be talking about, you know, that being more in the consciousness of the people as opposed to the Marvel movies. But they just haven't been good movies, so they're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think they all work whatever way they work really well. I mean, they could kind of do whatever they want to as long as it's good. I mean, you could take that sort of... I think traditionally, I think that his analysis is pretty spot on. Yeah. But
I think you make a really good point about the whole archetypal father-son, you know, that's embedded in the DC universe.
Yeah.
Comes out of the 40s and 50s.
Sort of, but also
sort of
it was
mentality in the comics, because Marvel doesn't come along until the 60s at that point.
It was played up in the 50s by the sort of the Mort Weisinger sort of school of things. I think that's where it really got locked in, and that went through the, you know, like it sort of survived through the 60s.
Right. So there's that DNA, and there's that DNA within those worlds in which DC, there's a lot of that mentoring, and there's that legacy aspect, there's the psychic becomes the father.
Yeah, and it's a very Americana thing, and like if you look through the 60s, they placed an emphasis on science because it was, you know, the space age, and that was the thing they were trying to do, and you wanted to look up to the people who were taking care of you, and that's a very 50s, 60s Americana sort of way, whereas Marvel really started to find its footing in the edges of counterculture. Started in 62, I think. That's the Fantastic Four, right? But as they get to the later part of the decade, you really see how they distinguish themselves from that sort of kind of DC comic. And I think we're still stuck with those to a certain extent.
Paul, you're a punk kid. What do you think?
I think it really depends on what was on your bed sheets when you were a kid. I had Superman bed sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Merchandising is everything.
Well, merchandising.
Now is completely different. I mean, there's more stuff now than we could have. I mean, Connor and I, in 1982, would have lost our fucking minds at the amount of stuff that is available now.
Right.
You know, and even you, Paul, you know, like it came on, I think, you know, when you were a little kid, there wasn't stuff everywhere, but it's nothing like there is now. You just get, if you like superheroes, man, you were living in the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Avengers movie is, it's too early to even see what the effects are.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be a huge sea change in terms of the superheroes that kids relate to or are familiar with these days.
Even if you look at like I'm thinking of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. Actually, you know what? Spider-Man, see, since the 90s, Spider-Man has always had a really big presence. Actually, before that, I guess if you're talking about Spider-Man as Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
It's sort of always been a Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's been animated in some way, shape, or form since the 60s.
Yeah.
I watched Batman, and then I would, you know, watch the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
I would go so far as to say that the reason that Superman edges out Spider-Man in terms of little kids, I'm talking about like when you first start to recognize characters and superheroes, is because Superman's face isn't covered.
Also, I think the wonder of the powers.
Sure.
You put your cape on fly, which is for a kid is mind-blowing.
Yeah. But
he's
also
all,
like
these all primary colors.
And
the face, and it's very simple. And
plus, Spider-Man's from Queens.
Scumbag.
but it is an interesting. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I buy into the black and white versus gray. I mean, we had this long discussion on the video show a couple years ago. We did an hour on this. I think at this point now, there's no real difference, but I think the DNA, the more important difference is the legacy aspect versus the non-legacy aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really.
But even that, DC sort of scuttled that with the new 52.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's gone now, but those roots are deep, so it's still sort of always there. And, they're going to keep going back and playing on that. You know, there's no one is telling a Superman story without being like, with Jor-El and Pa Kent being really strong figures. And they're not. The ones that stick around are not the ones that make it the more straightforward. Like, they're characters to be admired.
Right.
You know? they try to do the other thing where, I guess, like the Black Hand, like it was Thomas Wayne like a shithead. I don't think those work as well. They don't resonate the same way.
So, I mean, his question here, do you think characters or universes lend themselves to a younger audience, specifically DC? I think they both lend themselves to younger audiences.
I do too. I don't think that the rules apply so much anymore just to old farts.
But even, I mean, just in general, I mean, kids watch Spider-Man, they watch the Avengers cartoons on Disney XD, and those are named the kids.
And they watch the Teen Titans, and they, you know, they watch all of them.
And then the adults watch the direct-to-TV movies, which are PG-13.
And the adults also watch the children's shows, and they complain about them.
Right.
Well, I don't like this show.
But I think some of the more popular Marvel characters are more iconoclastic or even anarchist. Like, it's about, like, Spider-Man is about fighting, you know, like, parent, like, adults and parental figures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All of his villains are older than he is. He's a teenager. Wolverine is, you know, he kills.
What about Iron Man, though? He's arguably the most popular superhero in the world right now.
Oh, yeah, but I still feel like he's not. I don't feel like he's the character. And if you watch like Ultimate Spider-Man or you watch whatever, he doesn't seem to be he's not the one that's relatable to kids. He still always plays an older parent figure.
No, totally. But he's the one, you know, and a lot of it's Robert Downey Jr., but he's the most popular superhero in the world right now. Probably. I mean, if you look at just the box office from the movies he's in. And he doesn't really fit that mold. He's an older guy. He's a rich guy. He's an industrialist. He's an addict. He's a dick to little kids in an amusing way. But you know, it's interesting. He doesn't fit that Spider-Man.
All he did was tell that kid the truth. He said, "Don't be a pussy. Dads leave. It's what they do." If only somebody fucking told me that, would have saved a lot of therapy. I've never been to therapy.
Oh, I want to watch that right now.
I just want to watch that scene. I don't remember literally anything else about the movie.
That is the best part.
Oh.
So I think it's a great question, Josh from Chicago. Thank you for writing in between eating brats. We're doing this during lunchtime for me, so I'm just thinking about brats. But thank you. If you want to write in like Josh, write to contact@ifanboy.com. Leave your name, tell us where you're from, or call our voicemail line 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. To send us a voicemail, keep it around 30 seconds, and also tell us your name and where you're from. We'll get you on the show. Paul, you just put out another Booksplode.
We did. You can check out the Akira Volumes 3 and 4 Booksplode that I did with Scotty Young. That was quite a good time. And then the end of this month, we'll wrap it up with 5 and 6 and talk about the movie a bit.
Have you read 5 and 6?
I haven't yet. I'm
Are you excited?
Reading it as I go. It's really interesting. It's crazy because I remember like scenes that I think fondly of as being like 10. That was a great 10-page sequence. I go back and check, and it's like 40 or 50 pages. It's like a flip book almost. Just how, you know, decompressed it is. That's the word I was looking for.
Well, check those out. I wish there were new volumes of those, but they're not.
Yeah.
Also, if you're listening to the show, you probably by now know who the Yellow King is. So you want to listen to the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast.
Right? I'm sad that this is wrapping up. Yes, we're going to be talking about season one, the end of season one of True Detective, and I guess our wish list for what we'd like from season two. And I think all of us are reading that King in Yellow book.
It's on my Kindle. I haven't actually read it, gotten to crack it open.
There's like 700 versions of it available on Kindle.
They're all free.
And some of them have like True Detective in the name.
Oh, well, some people, I mean, it's public domain now, right? So people are just jumping on the bandwagon. I got it right when it was free, so I think I have the true version.
And we just hope that it ends with, and he really was the true detective.
I'm honestly scared to read it. I'll be honest. I'm going to lay it out here.
I don't want to read a book in addition to watching a show.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
I'm not going to.
You don't have to. Yeah.
I resent
says you. No one says you have to, Josh.
You're implying it. I'm a little resentful.
I wasn't going to. I haven't started it yet. I'm going to wait until after the show is over because I just want to watch the show for the show. But
and then you can easily
forget
about it.
I will then, you know, start a cult of murderers, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I don't have the stomach.
There's a really good chance that's going to happen too.
Yeah.
I would watch
that's
that.
True.
So that's over on Fuzzy Typewriter.
One more person who doesn't use their turn signal, I'm going to start a murder cult.
I got bad news about that, buddy. Listen, I haven't lived in LA for a while, and I don't know how much has changed, but
probably not that much.
If time is in fact a flat circle.
There you go.
God, driving here is awful. Head over to ifanboy.com, comment on this show, this week's books. That's where you can find Paul's Booksplodes about Akira any other special podcasts we do, you can all find them there.
We're also going to be talking about that new Marvel movie, speaking of, that Punisher.
Oh, yes.
Black Widow animated feature. That is coming out on the 25th, I believe.
Oh, I need to make a note of that. Also, there's the Sin City trailer came out, which completely slipped past me. That comes out this year. So we got another movie to talk about.
Yeah.
Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, which looks really good. Big fan of the first film, so I'm looking forward to that. That'll all be found at ifanboy.com eventually. Until then, follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. That's where you'll find out what the pick of the week is before we do the show. And you can also follow us all personally at C.S. Kilpatrick, J.A. Flanagan, and Fuzzy Typewriter on Twitter.
This is the part when I say the thing we just said a few minutes ago. Email us at every week I think I'd like to take this out of the script here.
We can take it out.
We can do it.
I know. I just only think about it right now when I'm about to do it and the recording is on. Oh, the recording is on.
We're on. People are listening to us talk about this stuff.
Contact at ifanboy.com. Leave a voicemail. 888-FANBOYS. 326-2697. In case that didn't get through to your head 4 minutes ago or we made you forget about it when we talked about that show.
If this is a thing you like, you should write a review of it in iTunes. Even if you don't like it, tell us what's wrong and we'll try and fix it. Let us know on iTunes. Helps people find the show.
Yes, we all know Josh is annoying. We can't do anything about it. At this point, we're stuck with it.
What? What? This is the first time hearing of that. Can you imagine having to live with me?
No. In fact, the other day, I had to explain to someone that you and I, in fact, never lived together.
Did that surprise you?
No, someone thought we had. I said, no. Or Ron. None of us have ever lived together.
I think everyone assumes that you guys and Ron and Gordon all lived in like a real world house.
Josh and Gordon lived together. Uh-huh. Ron and Gordon lived together. I never lived with any of them, and that's why we're all still friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I slept on Josh's floor once.
Yeah, I remember my roommate from college once was like, I don't want to live with Josh again.
Who is that?
Simmons.
Oh, oh, wow. He says that.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Listen, I had, whatever. I'm annoying in a whole different way.
That's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening.
Listen, if I don't get to go to the therapy, I got to get this out somewhere.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Del Dazzy.
Bye.